of the day, Matthews versus Waukesha County. Mr. Kinney?
Thank you. May it please the court. This is a straightforward case. There are issues of material fact over whether Debbie Rapp violated Bernadine Matthews' rights under the Equal Protection Clause on account of her race that can be proven under the indirect method. A jury would hear that on January 13, 2006, Matthews applied in person for an economic support specialist position and at the same time turned in an AAP form that indicated her race. Based on the information in Matthews' application alone, Matthews clearly met the minimum qualifications. However, she also submitted information about her qualifications in a cover letter and in a resume. Debbie Rapp held a lot of power in this process. She was responsible to screen for the minimum qualifications and to review the AAP forms of all the applicants. She referred at least three, probably more, but at least three that she admits to, white applicants who lacked the minimum qualifications.
Yeah. Your argument, of course, is that unqualified white applicants were forwarded past the initial review to the grouping stage. But isn't there also evidence of unqualified African-American applicants being forwarded as well? And if so, doesn't that indicate that race was not a factor?
Your Honor, I think the record is devoid of any evidence that any unqualified African-American applicant was forwarded on. I know that there is evidence that three...
I saw it in the record. I'm sort of amazed that you didn't.
Even if there is evidence in the record that unqualified African Americans were sent on, the test for the prima facie case under Title VII is that Ms. Matthews must identify members outside of her protected class that were treated more favorably than her. She has done that with these three applicants. Now, there were undoubtedly unqualified African-Americans and white applicants who weren't referred, and there were highly qualified African-Americans and highly qualified white applicants who were referred. But for the purposes of the test, for the prima facie case, all Ms. Matthews has to do is identify similarly situated white applicants who were sent on when she wasn't.
Well, see, here's my problem. There is evidence, of course, that Ms. Rapp erred in initially determining that Ms. Matthews lacked the relevant training and experience. But the rejection letter specifically stated that the applicant could call if she believed that the determination was wrong. And when Ms. Matthews did so, her application ultimately was deemed to demonstrate sufficient experience and was forwarded. But another person then determined the groupings, and that person wasn't even aware of the race of the applicants. The other thing that worried me was that she was less qualified than the persons who were hired for the two openings. And I just don't see the evidence that Rapp's initial determination was related to race. So if you can help me, that'd be great.
I'd be happy to. there is ample evidence that Ms. Rapp's initial determination was related to race. First of all, we've identified at least three that she admits to, white applicants who were referred with ambiguous qualifications, but Ms. Matthews wasn't. That's part of the prima facie case. Furthermore, when Ms. Matthews took Ms. Rapp up on that offer to call to talk about her qualifications for the position, Ms. Rapp told Bernadine Matthews that the position was filled. That was a lie. A jury should be able to infer from that, in combination with the evidence that Debbie Rapp admittedly referred three white applicants who she did not find to be qualified. When you take those two things together, a jury should be able to infer that race was the cause of Debbie Rapp's initial decision not to forward the application. Moreover, if one takes Debbie Rapp at her word, if one is to believe that she wanted Ms. Matthews to believe that the position was filled, she could not take the risk to forward that application. Because if she did, and Ms. Matthews was called for an interview, she would have been shown to be a liar. So there's actually evidence in the record for a jury to reasonably consider and conclude that Ms. Matthews' application never was sent. But even if it was sent, there's further evidence to show that the Equal Protection Clause was violated because Ms. Matthews was not allowed to compete for an interview like the other white applicants. That evidence is, when Page received Ms. Matthews' application, it was 13 days into the process. It was at least 2 days after Rapp talked to Matthews. That was 13 days out of a 20-day process. Interviews for the position had already been started. Page had already gone through all the applications and grouped them, had already determined who the most qualified were for interviews. And she received this application that late in the process.
Is there any evidence that Page, who ultimately determined what group Matthews should be in, was aware of Matthews' race?
There was testimony in Page's deposition that she is able to determine to her satisfaction with a reasonable degree of certainty whether someone's African American or not, depending on their names. There is that. There's also the fact that...
Really?
That's what she testified to. There's also evidence that multiple highly qualified African Americans, other than Ms. Matthews, weren't included in the interview pool. There's also evidence that courtesy interviews were used and that some of those people who received the courtesy interviews weren't qualified, and they were supposed to meet the minimum qualifications. But one doesn't have to conclude that Page knew the races of the applicants to conclude that Rapp's initial decision, her initial racially motivated decision, had an adverse impact on Bernadine Matthews' ability to compete for an interview. What's the evidence of that? Well, when Ms. Page testified that she grouped the applicants, and when she did so, she did it in a way to reflect the relative qualifications for the applicants for the ESS position, group one being most qualified, group four being least qualified. She put several applicants in group three. When asked about it at her deposition, she admitted that Ms. Matthews was as qualified or more qualified than that group of applicants. That is evidence a jury can consider to conclude that based on the fact that Ms. Matthews' application arrived late, that when it arrived, it came with the endorsement, so to speak, from Ms. Gage, that Ms. Matthews was initially found to lack the minimum qualifications, and the fact that Luann Page had grouped Bernadine Matthews behind several group three applicants who, Ms. Page says, were more qualified. I'm sorry, that Ms. Matthews was more qualified then, to show evidence that Ms. Rapp's initial decision prevented Bernadine Matthews from competing for an interview for that first position. Then there's also the April opening, and Ms. Rapp's initial decision on that January opening infected Ms. Matthews' ability to be considered for the April opening as well. There's evidence in the record to suggest that, it's admitted that the applicants for the January position were also considered for the April position. But there's evidence that a jury could rely on to conclude that only those grouped in groups 2 and 3 were actually considered for the April opening. Ms. Matthews was placed in group 4. The evidence, it comes in the form of a letter to the EEOC from the county, and further evidence exists that Ms. Matthews' application wasn't considered, because when asked to produce the list of applicants considered for the April position, all of the people who applied for the position were listed, even those found to have lacked the minimum qualifications from the very beginning. Other evidence exists to support a pretext claim, aside from Ms. Rapp's knowing lie to Ms. Matthews about whether the position was filled. For example, there's the EEOC charge itself, which is of minimal persuasiveness, admittedly, but it should count for something.
Mr. McKinney, if Ms. Matthews were to succeed on her complaint, what relief would you obtain?
It depends on which portions of her complaint she succeeded on. There's a justifiable argument that Ms. Matthews was more qualified than Priscilla Turner. So if she were able to prevail on the fact that she was denied that position, she would be entitled to emotional distress, damages, back wages, the normal damages that would flow from a Section 1983 claim. If, on the other hand, she was only able to prove that she was denied the ability to compete for an interview, then she would obviously not have a back wage loss claim. She would only be entitled to the other forms of relief.
Well, that would be an injunction preventing the county from using their practices, right? But you did not plead that.
That would be one element of relief. But just like in a First Amendment case, when someone is when someone's retaliated against for exercising their First Amendment rights, and it is thus a violation of Section 1983, that party is entitled to money damages that flow from the retaliation in and above an injunction. This is similar. Ms. Matthews should be entitled to seek recovery for emotional distress damages that she received as a result of being denied an opportunity to compete for an interview. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kenney. Ms. Nelson.
Good morning. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Mary Nelson. Amy Doyle and I represent Debbie Rapp in Waukesha County in this matter before you this morning. The district court properly granted summary judgment dismissing the complaint. In this appeal, Matthews is asking this court to do what it cannot and will not do, and that is to act as a super personnel department. The inferences that Matthews suggests that this court accept are not reasonable and are not supported by the undisputed facts. As stated by this court in McDonald versus Village of Winnetka, inferences that are supported by only speculation and conjecture will not defeat summary judgment. In other words, simply calling someone a liar is not enough. It is not enough to say that it is possible without any supporting facts. Contrary to the allegations in the complaint that include statements or allegations that Matthews was equally as qualified as other applicants, Matthews no longer appears to make that claim. She no longer claims that she should have been interviewed. that she should have been hired. Rather, she claims that she was prematurely eliminated from consideration in the hiring process, and the focus is on the review by Debbie Rapp at the initial stage of the hiring process. There is no direct or indirect evidence to support this claim. There is no evidence that Rapp, any decision made by Rapp was based upon the race of Matthews or any other applicant. There is no evidence in this record that Rapp played any role beyond the initial review and referral of the applications to the hiring department, that the particular decision maker in this case being Lou Ann Page. Touching upon some of the facts and addressing Mr. Kinney's arguments, and just simply presenting just a quick chronological synopsis, 132 applications for this particular ESS posting were received and reviewed by Debbie Rapp within Human Resources. In reviewing Matthews' application and her qualifications, Ms. Rapp's initial analysis was that those qualifications didn't meet the minimum training experience qualifications for the position. She therefore determined that Ms. Matthews was not qualified, did not meet the minimum qualifications, and sent her the letter. And as correctly pointed out, the letter invited Ms. Matthews or any recipient of the letter to call her if there was additional information. Ms. Matthews did do that. Spoke with Ms. Rapp. Ms. Rapp, while Ms. Matthews was on the phone, spoke with one of the supervisors, Renee Gage, who, after consultation, determined that Ms. Matthews did, in fact, meet the minimum qualifications for the position. Ms. Rapp advised Ms. Matthews of that fact. The application was then referred. And when I say it was referred, means that it was referred to Ms. Page, who was in charge of that particular recruitment. Ms. Rapp admits that she made a mistake. At that particular time, she corrected that mistake by referring the application. Ms. Page received that application. Her testimony was that the applications came kind of piecemeal. I don't think there's any evidence to dispute the fact that this one was the last one. Now, where in the process it was, I know that the testimony from Ms. Page was when she received the phone call that another application was coming, her thought was, oh, I may have to schedule another interview. So the interviews had either been scheduled, were in the process of being scheduled, but we were in that time frame. There's no dispute that in terms of the referral and then the evaluation by Page as far as the review, the grouping, and the decisions, that Matthews was treated like every other applicant in terms of the review process being the same, the grouping process being the same. Now, it's important in the context of this case to understand the fact that there were no restrictions or limitations on the number of applications that could, in fact, be referred. So, for example, here, 132 applications were submitted, and 43 of those were African-American applicants. 87 of those applications were referred to the department. So there was no limitation on that number. There was also no limitation, and as you know from the record, that because there were so many applicants, Ms. Page had followed or had grouped the applicants based upon experience. The record is clear. This is a practice that had been employed in the past. This was one that she chose to employ for this particular recruitment. There was no limitation on within, for example, in a group, for group one, the most qualified, there was no limitation or restriction on the number of applicants that could be placed in group one. So there were no restrictions there. There were no restrictions or limitations on the number of applicants who could be interviewed. So in terms of the decision maker, the person making the decision on all of these steps, Matthews was treated the same and received the same evaluation. And based upon Ms. Page's evaluation and assessment of her qualifications, had grouped her in group four. it's important that in evaluating this, the relevant time is at the time the decisions were made in terms of the review, the grouping. Back in 2006, it's not, you know, 6 years later in the midst of litigation when depositions are being taken and questions are being asked in the present time. So that's important. When we talk about Ms. Matthews had talked about these three white applicants who she deemed to not meet the minimum qualifications, I submit there may very well be white applicants who may not have met at the time the evaluation was done. The thought was is that they did. The same could be true for African-American applicants. But it's important to note, and it's interesting to note, that from Ms. Matthews' standpoint, based upon her own evaluation, she thinks that Debbie Rapp over-referred African-American applicants. So there's a real disconnect and hypocrisy in the positions that are being presented to you. There's no evidence, and the record is actually very clear, that the decision-maker in this case, Lou Ann Page, did not know the race of Matthews, did not know the race of any other applicant. There is...
What is the impact of what Mr. Kinney mentioned about the... Ms. Page noted that she could determine the race of an individual by the person's name.
Judge, I was there for her deposition. I don't recall that. I recall some questions being asked about kind of the name association. Well, doesn't this sound like the name of a black person? And I remember, and so, for example, Princella Turner, who was hired in the April, the question was asked, and what I remember from Ms. Page testifying is that to her it sounded like a Southern name, but I do not recall that testimony that somehow she could divine from someone's name what their race was. I would also... In the briefs, there was discussion about another case arising out of all of this, and that was Thomas, that was decided before Judge Adelman. And Matthews takes the position that there's no relationship, no correlation, and the court should not consider how Judge Adelman decided that case. And it's important to note that while they were two different applicants, the record that Judge Adelman relied on in making his decision and determination that Page did not know the race of any of the applicants, including Matthews, it was the same record as in this case, because in Thomas, the court allowed plaintiff's counsel in that case, who had not conducted any depositions, to use the deposition transcripts from this case in the Thomas case. And so Judge Adelman was actually looking at the same testimony, the same record.
Did Ms. Matthews belong in Group 4, given her experience, or in hindsight, should she have been in a different group?
You know, I bet you if you asked Ms. Page that question, hindsight's 20/20, we all know that. At the time she reviewed, that's what she honestly thought, that's what she honestly believed, and that becomes very, very important in terms of evaluating pretext. And, you know, Waukesha County has articulated a legitimate, non-discriminatory reason for the decisions it made in both hirings that are addressed in the brief, and that it has to do with qualifications. And keep in mind, both of those recruitments were handled by different supervisors employing different approaches to the hiring decision. But as you know, in order to prove pretext, the plaintiff must prove that it's a lie. And there's nothing in the record to support that. The record is very clear. The facts are undisputed. These people believed at the time these decisions were being made that they were making the proper decisions fairly. based upon qualifications and not taking into account the race of any applicant, simply trying to do the best job. Was it perfect? No, but it was not discrimination. And for these reasons and the reasons set forth in the briefs, we respectfully request that Judge Randa's decision be affirmed. Unless you have any further questions,
apparently
I'm
not.
Concluded. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Nelson. Mr. Kinney.
A common refrain from employers on appeal is that every Title VII plaintiff is asking the court to sit as a super personnel department. That most certainly is not the case here. Ms. Matthews is not saying this is a disciplinary decision that I disagree with as on management criteria. Ms. Matthews is asking the court to take account of the demonstrated different treatment she received from similarly situated white applicants. Ms. Matthews also most certainly is, well, part of Ms. Matthews' claim is that she was denied the ability to compete for an interview with respect to both the January opening and the April opening. But with respect to the April opening, I want to be clear, she is claiming that she should have been interviewed had she been placed in Group 2 or 3, and that she was more qualified than Ms. Turner. Ms. Turner's most recent experience for the position was acting as a CNA and providing care to people, whereas Ms. Matthews had 19 years of experience interviewing and determining how to help people pay their energy bills. And there is evidence beyond... I've focused on the three white applicants that Ms. Rapp referred on because those were the three that she admitted to. But a look at the record shows that Ms. Rapp actually had a strong tendency to send on white applicants who were less qualified than Ms. Matthews or as qualified as. Nicole Davis is an excellent example. They were almost identical to each other. But Ms. Davis was referred, Ms. Matthews was not. One fact that's been left out of whether or not Ms. Page is lying about why she placed Ms. Matthews in Group 4 is that Ms. Page testified that she was anxious to fill the position, that she was in a bit of a hurry. At least that's an inference that can be drawn from what she said. That coupled with the fact that Ms. Matthews ended up being Ms. Page testified that Ms. Matthews was more qualified than several Group 3 applicants is evidence that she's lying when she says she evaluated Ms. Matthews' application at the time.
Your position is that Ms. Matthews was a stronger candidate than Ms. Turner?
Yes.
Ms. Turner is an African-American.
She is. There's a chance that she may have been included because by the time that position was being filled, Waukesha County was aware of Ms. Matthews' EEOC charge. So it's possible that they needed to hire an African-American to make themselves look good. But one way or the other, Ms. Matthews claims to be more qualified than Ms. Turner. Mr. Richter, the Human Resources Advisor, had never heard of groupings. Ms. Matthews' application was not treated like all of the other applications. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kinney.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nelson. The case is taken under advisement.